those questions related to what had actually happened to me as far as meeting someone from India. What did the avatar mean as a concept, the God-man? How I knew that Baba was like Jesus, but how could he really be God in human form? And by that time, I'd read the discourses several times. I'd been to meetings, and I'll say I was a bright kid. I took junior high in 2 years and finished high school at 16. And I had a lot of questions. What is karma, sanskaras, and all of these ideas that my buddies weren't talking about or weren't interested in? So I had really a list of questions, in a sense, for Baba, if I ever were to see him again. And I knew we would, because we read the family letters, and Mani was so loving and would keep us in contact, and that's what we held on to, really, was the family letters. And so when the word finally came to see Baba in 62, I was very worried that it came in the middle of the school year. It was in November, actually, when we were going to be there. And Auntie Boo has told the story many times. And very briefly, it was the fact that I was in a competitive science high school, Stuyvesant, which was like Bronx Science and Brooklyn Tech, public, but you took an exam to get in. And every week, you know, these intensive tests, calculus, physics, board, regents exams, plus football was very meaningful to me. It was a good outlet for me. And this was a year that was pretty important as far as my involvement with football. And I had a very special coach who meant a lot to me, and I really wasn't sure how I was going to go about just walking away from all that. But yet, this was something I'd waited for years and really dreaded even bringing it up. So somehow I got the courage to go into Dr. Fleedner's office, right, principal of the high school, and it's a very stern man, and I went in, and just as I'm talking to you now, tried to say that I had met this Indian spiritual leader when I was 11 and that my whole family was going to go to India. And he had invited those who could come from the West, and about 10,000 or so of his close followers in India would be with us for what was called an East-West gathering. And then I just sort of kept quiet and waited and thought of Baba for his response, and all he could say was, "Why only 3 weeks?" And, of course, this was Baba, and just turning the key, and I just felt this tremendous sigh of relief that he was so positive about it and saw that this would be a great educative experience for me. And so Auntie Boo told that to young people who had problems with jobs, who had problems with school, and how Baba sometimes works and turns the key. As it was, I did decide to come back early because of those responsibilities. So all the anticipation led to us actually getting on the plane and going to India and the passport and all that. It was very exciting. And getting our shots. And we put up with anything to go. And we arrived. And I remember this exciting time at the airport and being met. And then we had this train ride, which was very scary. I think it was the Delta Queen or something like that. Does that sound right? Deccan Queen, because of the Deccan Plateau. There's a Delta Queen we used to take to go to the center. And it was scary. We were on the edge of these mountains and going backwards half the time, depending on where you were seated. And we finally got to Pune. And we were lucky we got to go to the Turf Club. I think they were all very nice, but the Turf Club probably was the nicest. And I'm sure because of Auntie Boo, we got to sort of ride her coattails. And so there we were in these little rooms with mosquito netting and these fellas bringing bananas with green skins that tasted great and tea and all that to us. And then the next thing I remember happening was Adi Kayarani coming, who I had vague recollections of, striding into the Turf Club and saying, other people said, "John Haynes, where is he?" or something like that. And then Mother brought me to him, and when I saw him, I was afraid that I'd done something wrong. Because, you know, Adi and his imposing presence, and he had this double-breasted blue suit on and just held himself so proud and this sort of stern expression. And I had no idea what he was going to say. And he said, "John Haynes, you're to see Baba. He's sent for you right away because it's your birthday." And because it was a day later in India, it was my birthday, and I had turned 15, October 30th, and then the arrival on the 31st, so it was my birthday. And I was so excited. October 30th. Yes, it's a day later in India, you see. And so it worked out, of course, that Baba knew everything. And I remember saying, getting something ready, a jacket. And I saw Julia Mavris, who you probably have heard of or met, and she's Greek and very wonderful lady. And she was so downcast because her birthday had just been a few weeks before. And she said, oh, I want to see Baba so much. I remember her saying, oh, John, you're so lucky. And she said, will you think of me when you're with Baba? And I said, yes, I will, Julia. And I didn't remember her that well from before, but just those few moments, we became very close. And I sort of felt guilty that I was the one to go in. And I was the first Westerner to see him and alone, and I believe a day before anyone else, alone, a day early. So I got to group... Yes, I got to Gurupasad, and... Yes, and I got to Gurupasad and was taken in. And this is, I guess, one of the things that maybe I want to go into detail about, because it's something I'll always carry with me and something I'm very happy about, but yet also shows the things that I was going through at the time, perhaps for other young people who might be interested with the love reaction, but also the intellectual longing and the need to comprehend all of this. Going to India, and how could you be seated before the God-man? I mean, it staggers you. It staggers adults, and can you imagine somebody in a junior high school situation where you're trying to figure life out anyway, just in normal, everyday terms of fitting into the material society that is so competitive and getting good grades. And I had all these questions, as I said, and I also thought, well, if Baba is really who he says he is, I'll also ask some important earth-shaking questions like, should I go to Duke and be an engineer? I wanted him to go ahead and plan my life, because that was my dream, because my dad was from Durham and Rose Bowl, as I said, and I grew up around Duke, and Duke had an engineering school, and I had a chance to go to Harvard on an academic scholarship to play football. My coach sent one or two every year, and I was one of two students on a football team with an A average, but yet I knew I wouldn't have this engineering experience, so I didn't know what to do. And I wanted to be with my father also. So I had all these questions, and I came in, and all I can say, David, if you believe me, it's as if I had given Baba a hug in his bedroom at his home in Myrtle Beach and went to sleep and got up the next morning and went in another place, which happened to be in India, for another hug. Those 4 years were nothing. They were just an eyelash. It was unbelievable to me. It was as if I had never left him at all. And I remember being so overcome with gladness to see him. And out of the corner of my eye, in this long Mandali hall where Baba did his work in the mornings, I saw these handsome Indian men sitting so quietly, cross-legged, in the very back. This was in Gurupasad. This was in... I think on the side, it was a kind of Mandali hall because, yes, but to me it didn't seem so small, but maybe it was. I remember a lot of open space between Baba's chair and the Mandali sitting quite a distance back. Actually, it was a rectangular room. And it's interesting because of the impact, of course, that Baba had on me. I just wanted to embrace him and see his eyes, which I did, and feel that warmth again. And I was so happy that as I backed away from him to sit down by his feet, I heard Erich say, watch the lady, watch the lady. And I was terribly embarrassed because the Maharani of Baroda sits so quietly beside him on the far side by his left arm. I never saw her. And if I had been athletic, I would have gone right onto her lap. I had one foot in the air, and I literally caught myself on the other leg. And I managed to sit down somehow, and I remember just being taken totally off guard by that. Once I got myself together, of course, it was just Baba and me, and I didn't even think of the Mandali anymore. I didn't even know they were there and wasn't really sure that Erich was there. I heard his voice, knew he was there, and felt his presence, but basically it was Baba and not the Maharani of Baroda anymore either. And I didn't really need Erich for what happened next because he looked at me with this big beaming smile and took his hand in front of his face and kept raising it higher and higher above his head in graduated steps. And Eric said, Baba is happy to see you and how tall you've gotten since 58, almost as if a father would brag on how big his son had gotten. That's the feeling that I had, that he was proud of me, that I'd gotten taller, and also surprised too. And I said, yes, Baba. The very next thing that was said, and I want to get this right, through Erich, was, do you have any questions for me, John? Is there anything that you want to ask Baba? And of course, that's what I went in with, you see, this expectation of having all these questions answered. And in the times that I've tried to share this with people, it's very difficult to explain. It's not as if my mind went blank, but I can honestly say I didn't have any questions at all. There were none to ask. And it wasn't confusion. It wasn't just Baba took them away. It just, there weren't any to ask. There was no need to ask any. And for that brief moment, he, for the first time, let me see his authority, his power, his strength sitting in the chair. Whereas before, I saw him as love, as Jesus. But I saw he was in control, and I knew that he had an understanding and he had a divine mission that we talked about in meetings, but I had trouble intellectually understanding. He let me just for a second see that. And as a result, those questions faded away. And because of that, I also knew that it's like the song we used to sing at the center all the time. He's got the whole world in his hands. I knew that I was in his hands. I knew that. And because I was in his hands, there was no need to worry about Duke or engineering school. And ironically, I did end up writing him about it later. But at that time, I was totally in his hands, and I just smiled and I said, you know, no, Baba, I'm just so happy to be with you. I don't have any questions. And he beamed and sort of went like this, this gesture of apart, you know, from him with his hand and arm, which Erich interpreted as, that's good, that's good. And years later, I shared this with Margaret Krask, who I would see for years in the summer over the dinner table. We would share stories, and I happened to say that. And she said, you know, that's a very smart answer. She said, Baba didn't like for people to ask questions, and quite frequently he might say, do you have any questions? And I laughed, and I said, you know, I didn't plan it that way. She said, I know, but that was a smart answer. And I'm sure that he was happy with that, that you were just glad to be with him. And there were some little exchanges, but not much, fairly brief interview, and just basically felt the love again as I left and gave him the embrace and then went back to the turf club, just floating. And I went back again with something to take with me, this time not one piece of candy, but a whole box for my birthday. And Baba had, of course, seen about this, and it was a beautiful tin with some kind of painting on the front, I don't remember, but a happy painting of people. And on the front, it was labeled J.B. Sweets. And to this day, I don't know if it's a famous company or not, but my name is John Barry Haynes, after my mother's father, Irishman John R. Barry. And to see my initials, J.B. Sweets, to me was kind of a joke. I thought that was great. It could be. It could be J. Baba. That's great. I'm glad you told me that. I never thought of that. J. Baba. And I remember the sweets were very strong. There was some coconut or something in them. I don't know. They were very strong. And I had started eating them immediately because I knew you were supposed to. Well, the first thing I did was find Julia. And I took a piece out and I had the box in my room and I went to find her. And I said, Julia, I've just seen Bob and told her what happened and that he looked well. And she was so glad. And I said, look, this is what I have for you. And she couldn't believe it. She said, oh, John, and you have, you know, Julia, she's just so loving. And she said, you brought this for me from Baba. And she was just like a little girl, you know, even though she was a middle-aged lady. And it was as if I had given her an embrace or something. And that was Baba, of course, through that piece of candy. And someone said, you mean you gave Prasad? You're not supposed to do that. But I think in this case, Baba would certainly have understood and agreed with this, because I had a whole box anyway. And she was just so happy. So, and of course, my family was happy for me, too, that it was my birthday. But I think Wendy and Charles really wanted to see him very much, and everybody did. So then the next day, we came in, and one of the most important memories I always have of Baba is that he was always waiting, and I'm sure you've heard that before. He was always waiting there. He was always early. And we were the ones who would be coming in. He always arranged that. And he would even, I think, stride in the center in 58, people told me in earlier visits, they would plan their breakfast accordingly, and then Baba would change things and come walking in while they were having breakfast. He was always on time, and it was something secure about him being in the chair, like this big chair I'm sitting in now, just waiting to receive us, like, here I am, you know, I've been waiting for you. It was a very comforting thing, rather than some vision of a guru striding in with tablas or something going. It just was a very natural, spontaneous thing. You're visiting your father in his home. And I like that. I remember having a very different experience in one way, just as a superficial way, perhaps, than my mother and my brother and sister, in that I was going through typical adolescence and, as a result, very moody, wanted attention, and so I'm not in the films as a result. And the reason I'm not in the films is because Charles and Wendy, full of love and spontaneity and innocence or whatever, and mother through her own relationship, were always right by Baba's side, and you can notice that in the films. And I'm always hiding or standing in the back somewhere hoping to be noticed. And I think part of that was that the programs were very long, and I was used to stretching and athletics, and I found it very difficult to sit in front of Baba upright. Couldn't, was very stiff at that time and couldn't really sit properly like the Indians. And I kept shifting and also would get sleepy, and I didn't want to nod off in front of Baba. And also, I guess I was trying to understand all of this. So a combination of things led me to always be in the back most of the time in the morning sessions. But I remembered not being so far away that I couldn't notice Baba doing his work, as Mother indicated, with his hands during the music, and also the intense quiet, even though the music would be going, and these were stars from all over India that came to perform for Baba. It's as if he was doing that work with us, even though we were just on the surface sitting there listening to a performance. And as a result, it was very draining. I remember just being exhausted from being in that room. And then we go have a wonderful lunch at the Turf Club and get on this bus again, and we had these Mayor Baba patches. You've heard all these stories about 62. And then we'd come back, and we would literally run down the road to see Baba because we knew he would be there. Then in the afternoons, of course, it was very different. And there were 10,000 people or so, and you know all that, and we'd be seated out in front, and then Baba then would be brought in, which was different. And I sat with the dancers, and I remember not knowing much about dance and being sort of amazed and interested that there would be male dancers, and they shared a lot with me. And I remember being impressed that they had sport coats and this and that from Scotland and all over the world, and how they were Baba dancers. And so I sort of hung out with them, and I sat with Tex and Peter and so on. And I remember Tex about 2 years ago sharing something that made me very happy, and that was that he was in the lagoon cabin when I met Baba, and it was the first time that this had happened for him to be with Baba when someone would first meet him. And he told me that Baba seemed very happy to be with me and meet me, and that everyone in the room seemed to be impressed with that and also was very happy. So that made me feel good because I didn't remember that. So anyway, I was with the dancers, and day after day, I remembered Baba sitting on the dais with all this patience.
I said, do you remember the name Buddy, who was a friend of Margaret's?
Bunty?
Buddy.
I'm not sure. It's possible. Was Buddy a dancer?
I don't know if he was a dancer. Somebody, he had text on me the story, but he didn't tell me the guy's last name. Was it? He came to Baba, you know, first time East West gathering, and met him. First thing Bob asked him was, how's your ear? And he had never told anybody. He had had an accident in the war. And he had ear trouble. And
I probably met him. Was he there?
Yeah, in East West.
And that's when this happened.
East West.
No, it may be that he sat with us because there were several of us that sat together, so it's possible. But I just remember that it helped me to have these men, you know, that were nice to me because my mother was separated in Annie Boo, and you see, as you know in the films, the men were on the left side as you face Bob, and the women were on the right. So it was some companionship. And I remember being struck by the men Mandali being allowed to bow down to him. And we were told that was the first time about that. And that was very interesting to me. And of course, just the sheer drama and the infinite patience that Baba had to be suffering and yet be able to sit there day after day after day, hour after hour, minute after minute, and all these garlands. And you know all about that. I just couldn't believe it. And I knew he must have just been exhausted and drenched after that. And I would see Eric constantly work on him. And just, he gave us that picture of his, that phase of his work, which of course we hadn't been exposed to before, but people like Kitty and Margaret and Auntie Boo had seen, you know, in the early days, and Fred and Darwin Shaw and those people, Don Stevens. So anyway, I remember toward the end, and then I'm trying to get to another special story, and this is sort of just background, and I know, you know, won't be used, but it's helpful to me. I remember the crowd pushing the gate down and just pressing forward, and they weren't supposed to come in, and Baba allowed them, you know, to come. And that's when I am in a film for just a split second, which makes me happy, and it shows the intensity that I was experiencing. I was arm in arm with the Indian Mandali and the other Indian lovers on the dais itself. They literally were trying to press as almost a riot to Baba. And I remember feeling brotherhood with those Indian men at that moment, and I was very glad that I got to help with that. I'm not sure if Charles did or not. I know I did. But basically, those afternoons, we're just watching Baba. And that's basically all that I remember right now that I would like to go into, except this one key experience on the last day. Yes, and over and over, as I said, I didn't have these questions, but yet, ironically, Baba was still doing work with me during all this time, because I would see his work, and then intellectually these questions started coming back. And I remember a large photo of Baba, which is the universal message photo, the Sadra picture, which has sort of followed me around and followed probably a lot of people around. I'd see it on a wall. I gave some stories in Myrtle Beach at the center on Tuesday night at the discourses, and was able to share some things. And then afterwards, told this story. And when I finished, I turned around when everyone had left, and right above my head, without me even knowing it, was a Sadra picture. And I'm sure the people were pretty amused when I was telling the story to see it right above my head. It was quite amazing to me. But I'd seen this picture, and I didn't know about it, really. I didn't know what to think of it. I mean, I liked it, but it was so huge, and I didn't know what I should do about that picture. And it had a frame, and it was several rupees and so on. But that has a context to the story, because as we were leaving, there are two, really. There's the Arti and this story. I thought to myself, David, I thought, and you know the thousands of people who love Baba, I thought, how could he love each of us as individuals? I mean, it seems incredible that he knows each of our souls, and because we're in the surroundings, we've known him for lifetimes. But intellectually, it's so hard to accept, you know, that we're not just one of the masses. So I decided I had to test him. I wanted some kind of sign. I wanted some kind of proof. And part of that was because I felt very strongly, I don't know why, that I would never see Meher Baba again. And Auntie Boo said this when she read the cable about him passing, that John Haynes always said that we'd never see him again. So because I had that feeling, and because I wanted to know that I counted in his own heart and in his own circle as an individual, and wanting some confirmation because it seemed so unbelievable, I had to, in a sense, test him. And because I'm athletic, I know distances, and I know I had to be at least 40 yards away. And all I can say is it was the last day, and we were pressing for the exit under this tent, this pandal, and it was as if you and I were just shoulder to shoulder, and there were several of us around. And Baba was leaning over the side of his chair, just like I am now, and Erich was whispering in his ear. And I was in this direction to Baba's left, toward the door. And I decided that I just wanted, to see if he would pay attention to me. You know, I wanted to say goodbye also. There were a lot of things happening. You know, I don't know what came over me to do this. But in the middle of this throng of humanity, sort of like you'd leave a movie theater, I managed to get my hand up between these people. And then it just sort of, the people separated for a moment. I was able to get my hand up and turn so that I was in this position and able to just wave back and forth like this, and just immediately Baba turned and smiled and gestured and gave me this sign of perfection with his thumb and forefinger. And it was immediate, and there's no way he could have seen me because his shoulder was turned sideways. And I just burst into tears because it's what I wanted. It's exactly what I wanted, and he gave me that. And I ran to my mother, and I told her what had happened, you know, and I've told someone this, and they said, burst into tears? How old were you, you know? I said, well, I was 15, and it's pretty unusual for a kid 15 to just burst into tears, and I did. It was very emotional for me, and I told Mother about it, and of course, she was very happy and gave me a nice hug, and I said, I want that Sadra picture now. I have to have it. You know, will you help me buy it? Give me some money and help me buy it. I want to take it back, and she said, of course I will. And I felt enough love for him to want this huge picture in my suitcase, and it was just, it was that last little bit, you see, that he had to give me. And the other short experience was right after, and we were going to finish, and it was at the end of the afternoon, and I guess that was that day or something. It was very close to the end. I'm not exactly sure of the timing, but I remember we were singing the Arti. By that time, I was just so full of Baba's love. And yet, as I said, I knew I would never see him. So I had a plan. My plan was, when they sang the Gujarati Arti, and the women were so beautiful, and they had this flame, and Baba just seemed to just sort of float off, and, you know, he was there, but he wasn't there. I decided that I would close my eyes, and I would promise myself that every time I heard that Arti, that I would be there with Baba. And I wanted to hear every detail of it. And I'm sure you know what I'm talking about, where you just want to remember something in every detail, and you want to give it all your concentration. And that's what I did. I closed my eyes, and I've since gotten the English translation of Take My Mind, O Master, and Consume Me in Your Love, and so on. And Kitty gave me the record of that Arti in Gujarati for my group at Duke University, and I used it with my group, and I still have it. It's on a 78, and I only play it every 6 months or every year. And because I play it so infrequently, when I play that record, I'm with Baba. He gave me that gift. So I had to leave Baba, and he gave us that opportunity for a photograph. And this is becoming much too long. All right. He gave us an opportunity for a photograph outside Grupasad in the courtyard. And again, as I said, I'm the shy adolescent. Can you believe it? The chance to be in a photo with Baba. And I'm so sad, and just, I can't believe what's happening. And all these people are rushing to Baba. And I just felt, well, I'm, you know how I could have a silly reaction. Well, they're all rushing. I'm going to stand back, and I'm just going to bear this any way that I can and just watch this. And yet I wanted to be a part of it, but I was sort of too shy to be a part of it, and I was too sad to be a part of it, and I was too adolescent to be a part of it. All these feelings I know that happened to me. But I leaned over the railing so I could see it. And Baba, of course, you know that photo in the chair, and they're all around, and he looks so helpless, really, I think, so full of suffering. So we had the photo taken. And again, Charles and Wendy are right there, the lucky brother and sister. And so he came walking back up the steps, and I was leaning over this railing like this. And Baba came up, and I never dreamed, but he did turn and smiled at me. So I had what I wanted. I got what I wanted. And I remember finally getting to go back to India 15 years later and waiting, just waiting for that moment to go to Grupasad so that all these memories would come back. And no one told me that Grupasad wasn't there anymore. So I got off the bus, and I was just, I guess Mirji told me in Pune, but it was like the last minute I found out. And I got off the bus, and there's this condominium there, you see, and it's not there. But then Baba, in his tenderness, of course, had this memorial built And there was the same railing as part of the memorial. And so he gave me that experience. So I didn't get to be with Baba under that banyan tree, that surprise farewell, because I had decided that was it, as far as we all knew, that I would go straight back to high school because of exams and football, and Don Stevens was going back, which was all planned, I think, by Baba, because I had a wonderful, intimate time with him and didn't see him until basically about 15 years later. I went to Spain to see Don because I was in London and Paris, and we went back together on the train, and he told me Baba stories, and we stayed at the Taj Hotel and all that. So that was a special time with Don Stevens, and I identified with him because he was an engineer and so on. So that helped ease the pain.
So your mother and brother and sister?
Yes, yes, they stayed on, and they all went to Maharazad and Meherabad. And I had the tour of Baba places in Pune, but I went back, felt that I should go back. And I think in a way it was easier for me to go back. It would have been difficult for me to stay in India and not be with him. And many people said that.
So they saw him under the tree.
Yes, but I missed out on that. I think after that parting at the tree, there was a special tour arranged, and it was several days where they went to Maharazad and Meherabad. So I never came here until 1977. That's why it was so special. And, of course, Wendy got to meet the women and mother, and that's why, to me, it was incredibly beautiful in 77 to finally meet Baba's chosen ones, because they couldn't be with men, and that's getting ahead just a bit. So I went back home and, of course, trying to fit into school, and the rest of it can sort of be an outline, I guess. Going to high school and then making a decision in the middle of my senior year to live with my father, to get used to going to Duke in that same town, and completed credits and graduated actually from Durham High School, where my mother and father both graduated. Then I went to Duke, and I was 16, as I said. I was 2 years ahead and thought I wanted to be an engineer and build roads and bridges, because Dad was also in construction, as Mother described. And yet I found it very difficult to study till 5, had labs and help at my father's restaurant. I was one of 5 freshmen with a car. I lived with him. Long story short, it was too much freedom. I started to have a social life. I discovered girls. It was in high school in New York. It was impossible to meet girls in Manhattan. Everybody had a doorman, and the cheerleaders from Hunter High School, the girls' school, our sister school, just ran off after the last whistle. And I had buddies who, you know, knew all the cheerleaders. I didn't even know them. I didn't even have a chance to meet girls that easily. I did have dates, but it was like a big deal to go to a movie. And I'd study Q magazine for hours, so it would be the perfect date. It was really sort of funny. And I remember meeting Dee Dee Glore this past summer, and she was my first real date on my birthday in New York when I was 13, and Mother got us 5th row center seats to West Side Story, and we went to Top of the Sixes dinner and so on. But it was so different to be in Durham High School, because there were girls, you know, all around you, and it was quite an adjustment at Duke also. So long story short, it took me 2 years to do it, but I finally did it. I got in very bad academic trouble in engineering school, because I just didn't like it, and it was much more theoretical than high school, even though I did very well. So it was a matter of, do I go in the Army, or do I try and change my major and try and pull up these terrible grades? What do I do? And my father, being a soldier, I think, was also a little disappointed in my grades, and from his vision, viewpoint, they sold their books on scholarship in the 40s, as soon as they got them, and played football. He didn't understand what engineering was all about, and he didn't understand the hours that I had to put in. So he said, go on in the Army, you know, probably be good for you, you know, probably grow up a little, or something to that effect. But I knew in my heart what Vietnam was like, and I felt if I went over there in 18 that I probably wouldn't finish college. He never finished college. He did very well in construction business, but he went right into that afterwards. I really wanted to get my degree, and I felt I might be shot or killed. So I wrote Baba, and somehow got permission. I don't know how, whether it was slipped in through a letter by Auntie Boo or what. I'm not really sure. And we were lucky to have messages, as Mother said, through the years. And I have a book of those, which I don't have with me in India, unfortunately. But there are a couple that had great meaning to me, such as being able to live at Meher House when Baba sent a cable and said, now that Jane and Trio are at my center, their lives should be a message of my love and truth. They must not and will not let me down. That was one of the direct messages I remember that we got. So, but this was a chance for me to write, and I was able to do it. And Baba communicated directly back through Adi, and I have that letter. And the most important point here, I guess, to mention, other than the love that he sent me, was that Baba says, quote, first finish school. And it was just sort of left that way. So I did, and I was able to switch into economics and graduated on time and somehow got A's and B's and managed to squeak by with a C average or something and graduated when I was supposed to in 68 and met Margaret Emery from Durham, a local girl, and fell deeply in love with her, brought her to Meher Baba, and she came from a Christian background but was very drawn to the center and so on. And Baba, in a sense, blessed our marriage. We wrote and sent a photograph, and he smiled and pointed to it and so on and gave his blessings. And so I felt very good about getting married, even though I was very young to do it. And one of the reasons I did is because Baba says, basically, as you know, you're either married or celibate. Those are the two choices he gives you. And I knew I wasn't going to be celibate the rest of my life. And so Mother said something to the effect, well, John, are you sure? You're so young. And I said, well, I don't want to be, quote, I think I said, want to be like a butterfly going from flower to flower or something like that. And so I really, partly, I think, rushed into it because of Baba, partly because it was the only thing in my life that I hadn't done to grow up. I'd done everything else. I'd finished college. I was on my own, and I didn't have that ring on my finger saying that I was married. And that's a whole other story, because her mother didn't approve of Meher Baba. She was a 58-year-old widow. Margaret's father died of cancer when she was little, didn't approve of it at all, disinherited Margaret from her will. And also, we just basically had to send invitations out on our own. And we did get married in Antibu's church, which I think was meant to be in Myrtle Beach. And Mother gave us a reception. But it was very hard for Margaret, and it wasn't until I was in the Army until she sort of patched things up with her mother. And I can understand her mother. I was young, and the Army was after me, and she didn't want to lose her daughter. So anyway, we got married, and we had a beautiful few months in Myrtle Beach. I worked construction, building houses on the water, and spent a lot of time at the center. And it was a lot of, we lived in a hotel, motel for $75 a month, right on the ocean. I remember I had one little small room with a little kitchen, but it was fun. And I was very lucky because the Army was after me, and I got in a medical reserve unit a week before I would have been drafted. And Agatha Cates, this fat woman at the draft board, said, Haynes, John Barry, you're hot to trot, young man. You've had your 4 years of student deferment, and laughed about it. And Charles has his own story, but basically they pulled him out of line naked with his few little possessions in a bag like they do, and this doctor said, young man, have your feet ever bothered you? And he said, why, yes, all my life. And he said, well, I'll see you later, don't worry. So Charles is like a few feet away from where they're rubber stamping people, not even looking at them. This old doctor pulls him aside in a partition and signs, and he's out. And Charles had no idea his flat feet were that bad. Well, this is the same kind of thing, because I heard about this medical reserve unit at the last minute with Duke surgeons, and they, in a sense, gave Duke athletes a break, because I had played soccer on the team and so on, and I heard about it with several other guys and kept checking. The last minute, a physical therapy slot opened. So I got in, and it's strange in reserves. You go for duty without going to basic training. You go for meetings. So I worked at the hospital at Walmack at Fort Bragg for several months, and what I'm leading up to is a very terrible test for me. And my last real contact, actually, in the form, as far as I was concerned. And that was, of course, all these years that went by. I had a group at Duke University. I had meetings and so on. But we, of course, waited. And the Sahabas in 65 was canceled, which was a very crushing thing. I still remember the cable being read at Antibu's. Sometime, somewhere, someplace, you know, that message, and just terrible. Finally, going to Myrtle Beach and having these meetings and so on, finally we get the word through Mani that we are going to see Baba. after 7 years, and I really can't believe it, literally. So I get my passport and everything. We're packing, getting the shots. And wouldn't you know it, I get my orders to go in the Army. And as I say, it was a terrible thing. I thought about running to Canada probably for about a split second. I knew Baba wouldn't let me do that. I knew it would be wrong. I just didn't know what to do. And my conscience told me, John, you've got to go through with this. Baba knows about it. Just do it, and that's all there is to it. So I said goodbye to my wife of 6-7 months, and Auntie Boo, and mother, and everybody, and I got on this airplane that was supposed to take me to Fort Polk, Louisiana, Tigerland, and that's another story, too, swamps of Louisiana, and that's where only the officers go AWOL at Fort Polk. That's how bad it is. It's unbelievable. And so I had prepared myself for this, and Baba's timing to help me out with the trip a little bit. Terrible thunderstorms. My plane was delayed in Atlanta for some unknown reason. My mother happened to be there in Atlanta directing a play for Charles. Charles could not meet me for dinner at this fantastic motel. This strapping black fellow carried my duffel bag because he didn't go to Vietnam and wouldn't have to go, and he said it was the least he could do. I had a room with 2 inches of blue thick carpet on the walls, the ceiling and the floor, this king-size bed, this suite. I don't know what kind of room it was, but it was all that was available, apparently. It's the loneliest night of my life. And the Army had this room available. It must have been a wedding suite or something. So there I am in this room. And Charles couldn't meet us for dinner, but Mother did. And we had a very beautiful dinner together. And, of course, my heart was so heavy, as you can understand, David, if you put yourself in this situation. So she walked back with me to my room, and we were sitting on the edge of the bed. And I remember practically in tears, you know, just saying, how can this be? It's not fair. All the things, you know, that a kid would say, and waiting 7 years. I said, I just don't understand it. And not hysterical, but pretty upset. And Mother said, well, Baba knows, you know, he understands, and he's proud of you. And that helped a little bit. Not much, but it helped a little bit. So she left, and I went to bed and slept very soundly. And I had a wake-up call for, I think, 5 a.m., something like that. The weather had cleared. I got on the plane, this crazy plane. It was like TTA, Treetop Airlines or something. I mean, it was an experience just to get on this plane. I landed there in the middle of nowhere, Leesville. We got on this bus, and, of course, immediately, you know, it's reception area, and they start working on your head as soon as you get there. I was unique because I had a dress uniform because I'd been going to meetings, and all these other guys, you know, had just been drafted. So I was trying to fit into this whole thing. So they shaved my head, and the whole process of, we are Delta, mighty, mighty Delta, and they're marching. As soon as you get there, they're brainwashing you into this Army thing. And I didn't mind the physical part of it, but I had all these feelings, you know, of course. Here I am going through this. And we're even doing physical training, low crawling. And that afternoon, I got a phone call to the commanding officer's quarters. And you can imagine how unusual it would be for a private to go to the CO's quarters for a phone call, especially the first day of basic training. And, of course, it was my mother. And she told me that Meher Baba had dropped his body almost to the hour that we were sitting on that bed together the night before. So it was all planned. You know, Baba knew. He knew, and he gave me that test, and I passed it. And I hung up the phone, and then later my wife actually called, and she didn't know Mother had called. So I had 2 messages about it, and I had to go back, and I had to face that training. And, of course, I knew, as I said, I'd never see him again. I knew that. But I didn't really know because we were all getting passports. So can you imagine having to face basic training after that? And but in a way, it was a blessing because if I had gone to India, and I'm glad people had a wonderful experience, and I'm sure they did, but I don't know if I could have stood it. I really don't. And in a way, this was something that was just total immersion because there were no normal experiences. There were not even any females there. And we had spinal meningitis on the post. We ate separately by platoon, and I was platoon guide, so I got to go buy shaving cream and toothpaste for my platoon at the local PX. I fired expert and so on, and was promised to pass into town. Didn't get it. It was just total isolation. And You know, I'm sure my wife resented that I sent home marching songs, you know, instead of love letters. I just got totally into this experience, partly because of my father, partly because I felt Baba wanted me to be there, partly because I felt if I did go to Vietnam, I wanted to do my best. And this was another test.